This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy Wednesday, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 31st, episode 713. Good morning, Horse World.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Hey, everyone. Happy Hump Day.
Happy Hump Day, baby. Here's to another week. Halfway done.
Daddy, I want another pony.
They call Wednesday Hump Day. Innocuous jibber jabber.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on this Wednesday on Horses in the Morning. It's good to have Jamie here today. Well, Jamie, bring on the clones. That's right. The jury is in Texas on the case where these couple of ranchers sued the AQHA they said the AQHA basically had a monopoly and they barred clones from being registered at the registry, so thus barring them from competition, basically. And the jury, 5 women, 7 men, deliberated more than 10 hours over 3 days before reaching a verdict. And the verdict was in favor of the ranchers and against the AQHA. They said that the AQHA violated 2 sections of the Sherman Antitrust Acts and Texas statutes by barring the plaintiff's horses from its registry. Now, they did not award any punitive damages, no money exchanged hands. But, of course, the litigants came back and said, oh, we're happy with that we won, and now we'll be able to register our horses. The bigger question here is, and this came up in a couple of the articles, is what happened. Now, every registry out there, including the thoroughbreds, have to be wondering if they're included under this. So think about it.
Wait, so basically, bottom line is they can now register clones.
That is, well, the AQHA says they're threatening to appeal this, which would take it up to probably the state federal court or the district federal court, whatever is over Texas. But they haven't determined whether they're going to do that or not. I think they want to determine whether they're going to spend the money.
So they can now register. You said, like, I have a clone of my horse and I can register it and compete it now.
That's what the jury is saying. And see, they went after it at a different angle this time with this lawsuit. It was very smart on the attorney's part of the people who made the lawsuit, is because they went after this Sherman Act, which is that you can't have a monopoly that blocks people. If you're the only player in town, and you're making these discriminating rules that block things from happening, then you're violating the law. You can't do that. And that's the angle they went at. And, every association, this is the other side of it, is every association has rules and regulations for things. But I guess because they're the only association, and the only way you can go show is if your horse is registered and they're not letting your horse register, yet it is technically a quarter horse. That's the angle they went. But does that mean that, somebody's going to find DNA from Secretariat and, go out there and start cloning and they can register those clones? I mean, I don't know. So,
well, the way that act is written, it sounds like I've got an Arab, but I'd really like to include it in the thoroughbred registry. So, you know what? According to this act, you own the thoroughbred registry, so I get to be in it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That just seems like it's going to open a whole lot of cans of whoop, you know what? Because now we're in, I just hate laws and rules. It just doesn't seem fair to the people. But, they're spending all this money cloning, so they're like, well, we want our clones included. But it just sounds like, they're, okay, here, let's take this argument. You've got Augusta National that won't let women be members. In Augusta, you know what? You've got the monopoly on the golf, fancy golf course in Augusta. We want women to be a part of it. And according to the Sherman Antitrust Act, then these women should be members.
I know. And you know, this does too. I mean, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about take the clone thing out of it. Okay, let's take that out of it for a second because everybody has feelings on that. If you remove that from this situation, isn't an association, which is a private, basic private entity, allowed to make their own rules about stuff? I mean, the Thoroughbred Association says you have to have live cover. Does that mean now that you can, you know, you can do breeding mm-hmm. other than live cover? So there's a lot. You're right. It does open a can of worms, but that was it. That's what came down. I guarantee the AQHA is going to appeal this. They're not going to let this go.
And those people that spent all their money trying to get their clones registered, that like, yeah, you could have just bought other horses with all the money you've spent.
If you can afford to do as many clones as these people have, you have money to throw away. So.
That's true. That is true.
They have more money to throw away than the AQHA probably does. Although the one number that surprised me on here is in this article, they keep talking about the AQHA being 280,000 members, yet I thought they have always said they were 700,000 members. That was a lot lower than mm-hmm. I've always thought they were claiming.
Maybe so. Active members?
Yeah, see, you know how you can parse those things, too. So anyway, it's time to give us a call to play the equitymfg.com Wheel of Trivia, 347-637-3238. And so Jennifer can get to the calls. What is coming up on today's show?
On today's I Wish It Was Friday, Wednesday edition, the not-so-trivial pursuit of prize-winning opens the show. As another group of unsuspecting equestrians do their best to earn a chance at the wheel, and following close on the heels of this hilarity, horsey headlines of dubious importance, and one list so crappy that we recommend you set your morning beverage aside to guard against spontaneous laughter-induced spewage. And speaking of spewage, the Horse Health Report is here and introduces us to another acronym-worthy institution, the International Society for Equitation Science. Stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Now, that sounds deep. Thank you, Jennifer. Is spewage a word? We need to look that one up and find out. My Daily Winnie goes out to Todd Metzger, who posted on our Facebook page a video that he produced. It was a good video, too, set to music and well-edited. And it was a video of him doing some team sorting. So he was doing some team sorting and took a video from a helmet cam kind of thing. But it had his whole trip there and everything. And it was just kind of fun. It was a cute little video, and we appreciate stuff like that when we get to hear from our listeners. So thank you, Todd, for posting that. We really appreciate it. And Jamie, you're still with us, right?
I'm right here.
Okay, good. All right.
Well, my Daily Winnie, you know, we talked about Reckless being immortalized by a bronze statue. Such a cool story that this little mare from the war is going to be immortalized. Now, we've got another awesome mare that is being immortalized as a statue. And I just posted the link on our Facebook page. So the Daily Winnie goes out to Black Caviar and Luke Nolan, her jockey, who are actually going to be unveiled later on this year, hopefully, possibly as soon as October. And it is an image of Luke Nolan riding Black Caviar across the finish line, I'm assuming, because she's all by herself. this is taking place over in Australia, and we'll see. It is so cool. You can see some photos of it on the link that I've posted on our page. I found this on Black Caviar's Facebook page, so you can at least find it there if you can't find it on our webpage. But check it out. It is awesome. And it was all sculpted from a photo that he saw. And he says that the process takes about 6 months to get it done, and that he says you can't just piece it together. It takes a fair amount of fiddling and a bit of bashing them into place to put them all together. Imagine what like a sped up camera on one of these things would be. I mean, it's really cool. What an amazing thing to have that talent to sculpt. That'd be awesome.
Well, thank you, Jamie. And Jennifer is going to get the callers lined up again. If you want to play, the equitymfg.com Wheel of Trivia. It is 347-637-3238. There's a couple of lines open. And we want to get some winners this morning. We have eliminated the essay question for today because it just confused the hell out of all of us last week. So no essay questions today. A lot more A, B, and C. A lot more multiple choice, which should make it a little easier, and hopefully we can pick up some winners today. So we're heading out to the place you got married tomorrow. We're taking the day off and going out to St. Augustine for the day. We're looking forward to that.
That is just, I mean, obviously I get married there. It's one of my favorite places. It's a Florida beach that doesn't quite have, it's got more history. It's like the oldest city in the United States. So it's got so much more history than a place like Panama City, PCB, baby.
Or Daytona Beach.
In Panama City. Or Daytona Beach. Woo! Spring break! It's not like that at all. It is much more quiet, beautiful place as opposed to like drunk teenagers running around with, you know, airbrush t-shirts on with holding a giant drink. So it's really a beautiful, more quiet place, and a lot of history. The Fountain of Youth, Glenn, it's there. You should go check out.
Isn't that a Ponce de León sort of city? Isn't that what I remember?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
It is. It's a Ponce. If you live in Atlanta, it's called Ponce de León. Ponce de León was in St. Augustine.
Ponce de León.
And there's actually not one, not two. I think there's three Fountain of Youth in St. Augustine. So if you can't find one, you'll find two more.
I need one right now. I'm kind of feeling old at 51, so I could use a Fountain of Youth. I will search it out.
My brother says that his back fence goes up to the Fountain of Youth, to one of them. So if you do go to that Fountain of Youth, just say hi to my brother. He lives right across the fence line. And my mom lives down there, too. So, you know, it's a family affair in St. Augustine at this point. But you got to go to the fort. Maybe visit the lighthouse. The beaches are gorgeous. The water's going to be
Can I drive on the beaches there? We really like Daytona where you can drive on the beach. But just because your crap is not, like, three blocks away.
Well, Glenn, if you look at my wedding photos, you will see cars in the background. Driving past.
So I assume that's a yes.
You can drive off the beach.
Good. I like that. A lot of people don't like that for environmental reasons. I say, screw that. I want my ice chest a lot closer to the beach. That's my theory.
You know, it sure is nice. They're pretty good about, they've got the dunes and they've got it separated from the beach. It's a really long stretch of beach from where the houses are all the way to the water. So there's actually plenty of room to drive, plenty of room to park, and plenty of room in front of that not to mess with the dunes, and after that to not be close to the water. So your car will not get washed into the ocean. You will be fine.
Okay, good. Glad to hear it. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. So I'll let you know how it goes when we get back. I just thought of you when we thought, let's go there. It's only about 2 hours from here. So we thought we'd make a day trip out of it. And I thought of you because I knew you got married there. And you always said probably if you ever moved again, if you could move anywhere you wanted, you would move to Florida and probably that area. So we're excited to go.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful until, you know, like my husband wants to move to Oklahoma. I say, no, too many tornadoes. And I say, well, let's go to Florida. And he's like, no, too many hurricanes. So who knows? We'll probably be in Arizona forever.
Very good. Well, let's get to doing what we do at this time of the week. And we do this.
It's time for the EquityMFG.com
Wheel of Trivia,
where every week unsuspecting horse enthusiasts call the show with illusions of trivia grandmaster dancing in their heads, willing to risk all for their chance to spin the wheel and possibly win some fantastic prize. Or answer incorrectly and have torn away every ounce of equestrian street cred they have, like an old bell boot.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. We are playing the Wheel of Trivia. We have some callers lined up here. There's one line open if you want to give us a call at 347-637-3238. We're going to try and get some winners today. And Jamie will go over in a minute to the categories that we have for you. If you get the answer incorrect, you will hear the high school buzzer. If you get the answer correct, you'll hear the bell that's sitting here on my desk. And we have a new rule this week. Well, first of all, it's 5 seconds to answer correctly, and Jamie's a stickler, Dad, so don't screw up. And then also the other new rule is nobody from New Jersey is allowed to argue with our answers. Period. I'm just saying. After last week.
Yes, no arguing at all.
Well, let's explain why. Is Jennifer makes up the questions. Jennifer determines the answers. Jennifer pays my check and Jamie's paycheck every week. We do not argue with Jennifer. Get the logic? There we go. It's that simple.
Well, that, and I'm, you know, honestly, I'm a little scared of her. You know, let's be real.
Me too. Tell everybody what the categories are.
All right. Our categories for today are not so vital statistics. Now, not so vital statistics. I really didn't want to take statistics in high school or college. This is multiple choice, so you've got a good chance. You got 1 out of 3 shots. It's only 3. 20th century history. This is the history that most of these are also multiple choice. And myth, legends, and folklore are pretty much exactly what they say. Myths, legends, and folklore. So there you go. Those are the categories. Let's see who's up first. One.
We have, is it Rachel from Las Vegas?
It is. Hi.
Hey, Rachel. How are you?
You know, just waiting to get out there before it turns into too toasty. You know how
that goes. Now, where in Vegas are you?
I'm about a mile from the South Point Casino, so where all the big horse shows are held.
Yeah,
it's rough.
Kidding.
I'm telling you. Yeah.
And how is keeping a horse in Las Vegas? Is it easy? Is it hard?
You know, it's different. I grew up in western Pennsylvania where we've got a lot of fields and everyone's turned out unless, you know, you're actively showing or racing. So it's a little different from back home, you know, with the corrals and the turnout's not as much. But it works. It happens, you know.
And why are you in Vegas? Are you a dealer? Are you a dancer? I mean, what?
No, I work backstage at one of the Cirque du Soleil shows here in town.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to ask, what do you do? What show?
I'm a lighting technician at Mystère.
Nice. That's awesome.
That's not the naked one, is it, by the way?
Just ask. No, that's humanity.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, darn.
That's we're the fun, family-friendly. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a good show.
Fantastic. Well, that's cool. We got a circus person on our show right now, Glenn. This is awesome. what category, Rachel? What category would you like?
How about the history?
Okay. 20th century history. Let's see. Are you an inventor? Do you like inventing at all?
I like it, but I've never done it.
Okay, well, this is pretty easy as far as eventing 20th century history questions go. What American event rider won back-to-back world eventing championships aboard Irish Tap and Mighty Tango, respectively? Or Might Tango.
I was going to say, wasn't it Might Tango? Gosh, I remember the horses, but let me... Thing.
He might have also ridden a horse named Dr. Peaches.
Well, let's see. That would have to be Bruce, being a Pennsylvania girl.
Yay! You're absolutely right.
Nice! Bruce Davidson won it in 1974 and 1978, and then collectively in the 80s and 90s, I think, won every single Rolex that there was. And he's going to be on Eventing Legends at some point. The next Eventing Legends, I'll be recording it. I'll be nervous, but make sure you guys check that out when it comes out. Bruce Davidson, congratulations. Glenn, takeover.
All right, here we go. Let's spin the wheel. I'm glad you – hey, anybody gets up at that hour of the morning should deserve to win something.
Amen.
A lot of good prizes on the wheel today, too. Oh, and you just won one of them. You actually won the Carrots Micro-Cord Boot Cut Knee Patch Breeches worth $100 from Carrots. So you'll have.
I have wanted a pair forever, ever since Jennifer got her pair, and she was talking about them on the show.
Well, there you go. You have your own pair. Let me tell you a little bit about them. The ultimate in versatility, this pant can be worn with the paddock boot or easily tucks into the half chaps or tall winter boots. Figure flattering, compression microcord is supportive, provides unrestricted movement, and looks great both around the barn and around town. And you know, Carrots breeches tend to be a little tight, so where you work, you could wear them to work. You'd be fine. Everybody wears tights. Everybody wears tights there, so you'll be fine.
Awesome.
Thank you, Rachel. That was great. I'm glad you won. Hold on.
Thank
Jennifer
you.
Will get your address for you, okay? Hold
awesome.
On.
Awesome. Thanks.
All right. Good. Well, that's good. I'm glad we got a winner to start off here. Let's take another caller. We have a new caller from New Jersey by the name of Hannah.
Hannah, good morning. How are you?
Hello.
Our New Jersey contingent is getting bigger. Are you, where do you live? What type of horses do you ride?
I live in Bergen County, and I ride a Spanish Mustang.
Oh, cool.
Man, I'll ride the coolest horses up there. You think you'd just like quarter horse? No, I rode a Spanish Mustang. And where does one come by a Spanish Mustang?
He was originally from Mexico. And then my friend was looking for a new horse, and she got it for her husband, and he doesn't ride it anymore, so she lets me ride him.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, can I ask you a personal question? Oh, I'll give you this. Are you above 15 or under 15?
Above.
Okay, you're above. I was going to give you some kid questions because you have a very sweet voice, but sorry, now you got to answer the hard ones. What category would you like? Not so vital statistics, 20th century history, or myths, legends, and folklore?
Myths, legends, and folklore, please.
Okay. Ooh,
she's brave.
You dug your own grave. All right. What colors, and you know what, out of the four, we'll accept two. What colors were the four horses of the four horsemen of the apocalypse? What colors were the four horses? What color were the horses of four horsemen of the apocalypse?
Black.
Okay, one more.
White.
You got
brown.
It. We said two, so
you got
it. Black and white were two of them.
Awesome.
Very good.
The other two that you did not say were red and pale.
I don't know what color pale is.
Pale is. It's a bleached out chestnut.
Very good. Well, you get to spin the wheel too. Now, let me tell you, we have tons of prizes on here. We have helmets. We have all kinds of things left on here, including briars and applications and supplements. We just have all kinds of stuff. So let's spin and see. Oh, and then we have one crappy prize. Let's hope you don't get that one, Hannah. And that happens to be a bag of crap out of my closet. So that's what that is. Let's hope you missed that one. All right, here we go. Spinning the wheel.
When you said a bag of crap, I thought, oh, that's gross.
Oh, you win a very timely prize today that I think you're going to like a lot. You win the most sought-after briar horse right now, Sergeant Reckless. Who we just
awesome.
Talked about. Yeah, we just talked about that.
I collect briars.
Do you? Do you have this one yet?
Mm-hmm. No.
Well, you're going to be...
I was actually looking for it.
You don't have to look anymore. Briar's going to send it directly to you. And, of course, you know, we talked about Sergeant Reckless earlier in the show and the big statue that was just put up. And the Battle mm-hmm. of Outpost Vegas was what he was most known for. Did you see the picture of the statue? It is really cool.
Yeah. I saw it.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, this one has the, this fryer's, it has the unit blanket on with all of the unit insignias and the ribbons and everything that Sergeant Reckless got. You're really going to like it. And, of course, you can find it if you just head over to Breyer's website. But we'll have it sent out to you. Thank you so much for playing, Hannah.
Thank you.
All right. Hold on, Jennifer. I'll take your information.
Dude, that one's cool.
I know. You want
have
that
you
one, don't you?
It? I do. You know, at what age, Glenn, do we stop collecting briars?
I'm
35, and I just recently, you know, you guys know I got the Black Caviar. Before that, I bought Hickstead, and then before that, I had to get, you actually bought me one of the briars, which was Barbaro. So yep. What age do we stop?
Well, I'll tell you what. I have never owned a briar. But there's one briar I want. It's Sergeant Reckless. I would love to have Sergeant Reckless on my desk. You know, that one has a special meaning, I think, for everybody. That goes beyond, you know, briar collectors. I think
well,
that just I'm
a big part of to me why we're here is because of that horse. So
that's right.
No.
Well, let's take Denise
awesome.
From South Carolina next.
Denise, good morning.
Good morning.
How the heck are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys?
Good. How are things in beautiful South Carolina?
Incredibly muggy.
It's that time of year. You guys have had a ton of rain. I was talking to my friends in Georgia, and they said they're just swamp. It's a swamp right now.
Oh, yeah. It has been raining nonstop, and it is finally drying out just a little bit. I think this week it rained everywhere but on top of my house, and I'm very thankful for that.
Man, no kidding. I told her I'm actually going to head to Georgia on Friday and go out to almost to the Augusta area, and so or Athens. So I told her she's afraid to trail ride her horse, and I said, you know what, I'll get out there. And he loves it when I gallop him through the trees. It's been a couple years because I haven't been home to visit. I'm like, I'll take him galloping through the trees. He loves that. Because she's a dressage rider, you know. And
they don't do that.
She's like, yeah, they don't do that. And her horse loves it, but she does not love it. So she does arena work, and I'm like, I'll gallop him for you. She's like, you can't. And I said, why? What happened? Is he hurt? Is it? What's the problem? She's like, it is a swamp in the pasture. She said that they've had, like, they got 5 inches of rain in the day or something like that. The south has been wet. And Glenn, you said you've been getting rain every day, too.
Yeah, it's been very
right?
wet. Yep, it's been very wet. Yeah.
So, oh, yeah. No galloping in the trees.
I can only ride on my dirt roads because all the fields and everything are so swampy that you can't ride anywhere but on the so-called dirt/gravel roads.
Oh, man, that's brutal. Well, you know, April showers make May flowers, so hopefully in August it's going to be just gorgeous. Just gorgeous.
I hope so.
What category would you like today? Would you like to have the not-so-vital statistics, 20th century history, or myths, legends, and folklore?
I'm going to try myths, legends, and folklore.
You say that like you sound like Eeyore. What's the problem?
Let me ask a question before you do. Go ahead, Jamie. Why is it the same? We got brave, brave listeners. They always seem to migrate to the hardest categories. It just happens every week, and we're always perplexed why people, you know, migrate to the hardest categories.
Well, it doesn't sound like it would be hard. You know, myths and legends, and it sounds nice.
You don't know Jennifer.
Let me just tell you, before I let you make your final decision on what question, the next two questions, I did not know. And I've never heard of them.
You want to change your category?
Oh, well, no, I'll stick with my commitment.
Uh-huh, look at her.
Okay,
so
here we
girls.
Go. Southern girls are tough. All right. What are you ready for this? What Greek god drove a chariot pulled by fiery steeds across the sky each day?
Oh, wow. I know it's not right.
Okay, got to make a guess quick.
I know. Hermes.
Ugh.
Hello. So sorry. It was, now there's two answers. I don't know why there's two answers. Maybe he had just two different names, but his name was Helios or Apollo. Apollo was also one that drove the fiery shield across the sky.
Yeah, I should have known that. Well, shame on me.
Well, good. Thank you for calling.
Thank
good
you,
luck
Denise.
Next week. Hopefully we'll talk to you then, Denise.
Thank you. Maybe next week.
Okay, we have one time for one more. Yeah, let's
do
one more. We don't have Horse and Country today, so we can go a little long. Let's take Robin from Texas. This is Robin Donahue.
Hey, Robin.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
How are you?
Pretty good, and you?
Well, I can be, you know, any better. It's nice at 6:30 in the morning, and I'm inside in the air conditioning, so I can't complain. How are things in sunny, sweaty, humid, muggy Texas?
Just basically how you described it.
God, you gotta love end of July, early August. It does not matter where you live. It sucks. It just sucks. Unless you're probably in New Jersey, like half of our listeners, and it's probably nice up there. category would you like, Robin? Would you like not-so-vital statistics, 20th century history, or myths, legends, and folklore?
Let's try not-so-vital statistics.
Not-so-vital statistics. Okay. This is a multiple-choice question. So, what is an average horse's total circulating blood volume? 50 liters, 100 pints, or 13 gallons?
I'm going to go with 13 gallons.
Woohoo! The reason you got that correct is it is actually all of them. 50 liters, 100 pints, and 13 gallons. You were destined to win no matter what. It was a trick question. Congratulations, Robin. Way to go.
When I read the answer, I went, what? And then I realized that Jennifer was trying to be nice. She gave us one nice question out of 15, so that's not too... You picked the right one.
I sure did. Everybody else is picking themselves now.
That's right. That's right. All right, let's spin. See what you won. Robin, I know you've won a couple things before, so I hope you don't win the same thing again.
I'd be okay with a probiotic 8.
Well, how about this, though? You've just won. I don't know if you've won one of these before, but you've won an EquityMFG.com Flex and Fork. One of the most coveted prizes
awesome.
We have. Have you ever won one of those before?
I actually have one. I wonder if they'd let me upgrade to a shaken fork.
I doubt
it. Good luck. It's a little more expensive. You could probably pay the difference, though.
I'll tell you what, though.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I'll give you an option. If you don't want a second one, then I do have a Biotic 8, and they're very willing to give that away. If you need a Biotic 8 from Omega Alpha, we can do that too.
Oh man, this is a hard.
I'm giving you a choice. Look, she got the easy question, and I'm giving her a choice of her prizes.
You guys rock.
You have to decide though.
I'm gonna take my chance with Equity that they'll be willing to let me pay the difference and go for a shaken fork, because I've been pining for one of those ever since I got the flexion fork.
Well, you know what? It is time. We need to mention here that this segment is sponsored by Equity anyway. So do you like us absolutely love your flexion fork?
I love it, and in fact, I wanted it for Christmas because I wasn't quite willing to pay the money because they are expensive. I did get one for Christmas. The reason I wasn't wanting to upgrade quite yet is because I had one of those old metal ones where they don't break. I mean, if they fall apart, you just put them back together. And so I was happy enough with that. But ever since having the Equity Flexion Fork, oh my gosh, I do not want to go back to even the metal one.
And as far as tine breakage, I live in an area where there's a lot of limestone in the ground, and so much so that my husband had to buy a jackhammer to dig post holes. And when I'm cleaning the paddock up, every now and then I will hit a rock that is embedded in the dirt. And I'd say 80% of the time, the poop actually just like slides off into a nice neat pile on the ground. And I just go around the rock and pick it up again. However, there have been times that I hit the rock so hard, not the tine doesn't break, but the rock digs up from the ground. I'm just shocked that a plastic fork basically can dig up rocks that have been embedded in the dirt for how long and pounded upon by the horse hooves. So I love that thing. I love my flexion fork.
Well, there you go. There's a testimonial. We don't need to say anything more other than you're going to absolutely love your shaking fork, too. I use it every day in my piggy pony stall. And it just so nice. It's just so nice. You're going to absolutely love it. So we'll let you talk to Joseph. Jennifer will get your information here, and I'm sure that he'll work with you on that.
Let me point something out. This woman is tough as nails. You know how heavy those metal forks are? Good God. I mean, that's a 40-pound fork right there. The equity shaking fork is going to be like, you're going to use it with one hand.
Jennifer or Jamie, she's from Texas. What, you know what? I mean, she's from Texas. Of course she's tough.
That's true. Yeah.
I haven't always been from Texas. I want to clarify that. I am not a Texan.
Yeah, you don't have that accent.
No offense to everybody that is a Texan.
Well, we pissed off everybody from New Jersey today. Why not add Texas to it? Thank you, Robin. Appreciate it.
I said New Jersey was the nicest place right now.
You did.
Thank you very much. Everywhere else sucked.
See, hold on, Robin.
Okay.
Well, good. I mean, there's a testimonial for you. We don't even have to do a commercial. Robin just did it for us.
No kidding, man. That's awesome. And he hates it when we say stuff like this. Man, I ran over mine with my gator, and it's fine.
I know.
It's the time part. So it's awesome.
Well, thank you for playing, everybody, today. It was a lot of fun. We had winners today. Yay! That's a good thing, because we haven't had too many in the recent weeks. So we're glad that people were able to win today. Thanks, Jennifer, for making a question that I could have gotten right. I could have got that question right. Let's take a break right now. I had a chance to catch up with Tammy from the Western Radio Show. We have a very special and exciting announcement to make here on the Horse Radio Network, and Tammy's going to help me make it. And we'll be back right after that with my crappy list. I'm going to give you a choice of crappy list, Jamie. Hi, Glenn here, and I'm with Tammy from the Western Radio Show, and we have a very exciting announcement to make today, Tammy.
I know. Go ahead. Spill the beans, Glenn.
Well, we're excited to announce that the Horse Radio Network is a media sponsor for Road to the Horse for over this next year and coming into the next Road to the Horse in 2014, and we're very excited to be part of it.
It's kind of like you're going back to your roots, because you started in Lexington, Kentucky, didn't you, Glenn?
Yes, we did. We started in Lexington with the Stable Scoop Show, and then the 2010, the World Equestrian Games radio show where we started.
We'll be headed back to Kentucky in March. That's going to be really exciting.
I'm very excited about this. Tammy works with Road to the Horse and as their social media person, and also helped us get this all set up, which is why I'm chatting with her, and we're making this announcement together. And you guys over on the Western Radio Show are doing some special projects this year with Road to the Horse that I'm very excited about as well.
I know. This is the very first Road to the Horse where we have had a wildcard competitor. And what that means is everyone sent all their applications in to be a wildcard. Everyone had to send videos in, photos, information. And out of that, 8 elite clinicians were chosen from across the country, and each of those 8 clinicians took a horse from their Remuda home this year in 2013, and they have gone home and they're busy training that colt until Road to the Horse 2014. So they have it for a year, and then they're going to face off in a good old Western showdown, Glenn.
With guns blazing.
Uh-huh, yep. And then whoever wins that wild card will step straight into the round pen. So this is kind of the first time where we've really had not so much an unknown competitor, because we know it's going to be a wild card. We just don't know which one.
Well, yeah, and the other competitors that you have been world-known clinicians.
Uh-huh.
And so I like this. I think it's going to make it very interesting. And you're going to be doing interviews with and keeping track of all of those competitors, all eight of them, over the next year, and sort of learning about their horses and learning more about them as well over on the Western Radio Show.
Exactly, and that's kind of what we've been doing, and we're already following them on Facebook, and you can go to Road to the Horse Facebook. But, you know, what I think what's so great about this is we saw these colts run into the Alltech Arena in 2013 in March, untouched, wild, bug-eyed, you know, and now you're watching them under the guidance of these wild cards, and they are roping, they are getting hauled all over the country, and they are doing all of these amazing things in such a short period of time. So it's definitely a crash course for these colts to get them prepared for 2014. So it's going to be a really exciting event.
I'm looking forward to it, too. You and I will be there, and the Horse Radio Network will be there representing. We'll be doing some shows from there as well. That'll be the first time that we're at that event doing shows. It'll be my first time going. You've been there for a couple of times.
Oh, I am a Kool-Aid drinker. I love Road to the Horse. And, you know, the first time I went, Glenn, I was kind of like, oh, you know, a bunch of clinicians and natural horsemanship. This will be fun, you know. I had no idea that it would be, to me, it was the greatest equine event I've ever witnessed. I mean, and, you know, what makes me feel bad is I've got 5 and 6-year-old horses in my pasture I haven't had time for that aren't as broke as those colts after 3 days. It's quite embarrassing. I was like, oh my gosh. So it is really cool to watch these untouched quarter horses come in, watch these people get this partnership with these horses over such a small period of time, and then have to go through an obstacle course. So it's great watching.
When is it next year? What's the date?
March the 14th through the 16th at the Kentucky Horse Park.
And we hope to see you there. And we as I said, we'll be there all those days, and we'll be making our way back to Lexington. And I can't tell you how many shows we've done from the Kentucky Horse Park. It's been dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of shows. And this will be something a little bit different. We'll be back in the Alltech Arena. We're looking forward to it. Thank you so much for all your help with this, Tammy. If you want to learn more about Road to the Horse, go to roadtothehorse.com. RoadToTheHorse.com, and look for our continuing coverage of Road to the Horse over the next year until March of next year. Well, thank you to Tammy for helping us make that announcement. Now, you know, Jamie, I am really, really excited about this. Road to the Horse has become a huge, huge event. It's probably one of the biggest events of its kind. Well, it is the biggest event of its kind in the world now, and it is amazingly popular. So it's just really cool that we get to be a media sponsor and to get be part of it. We'll be on the concourse there set up during the whole event.
Now, seriously, I'm going, right?
Bring the baby.
Heck yeah. He's flying to Atlanta on Friday. He'll be way old enough by then.
Well, you know what? After the picture you just posted on Facebook, he looks like he's a cowboy ready for Road to the Horse.
I'm sorry. That's the cutest thing ever.
It is. Tell everybody about the picture you just posted.
So one of my friends for a gift for little Lucas actually sent me a pacifier with a mustache attached to the top of it, like kind of goes in between the mouth and nose part. So when he sucks on the pacifier, it actually looks like he has a giant, like almost handlebar mustache. So the picture is posted on Facebook. I took it myself. It was a little blurry, I guess. I didn't realize that. But the picture is on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. It's awesome.
I'm telling you, he'll fit right in there in Lexington at Road to the Horse with that handlebar mustache. It'll be perfect.
He's a little cowboy. I put that on him with his cowboy boots. Oh, man.
And then we'll have to find him a little cowboy hat, too. And it'll be set.
He does need the hat. We don't have the hat yet, but we've got him some overalls.
Do they make?
I thought that was
awesome. Know what would really top it off is infant spurs. Do they make infant spurs, or is that dangerous for mommy?
Well, I bet we could fashion something with tinfoil on these little cowboy boots.
Paperclip.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's do the wacky list of the day. I'm going to give you two choices for my crappy list. You get to pick which one you want. Depends what mood you're in. I have 10 crazy analogies instructors make from Horse Nation, and that should be interesting with you and Jennifer to comment on those, or crazy fast food facts.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I actually read the one about the instructor because I read Horse Nation, too. So it depends on what you want. I've read that, but I haven't seen the fast food facts, so maybe that'll be interesting, too.
All right.
So, you want
fast food facts? Okay, here we go. These are some facts that I found on a website called likes.com. So these are just some things you may not know. What is the most popular food in America?
What's the most popular food?
Yes, most popular food in America. Like pizza or, you know, those kind of things. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I go with pizza.
Wrong. Believe it or not, it's French fries. French fries became the most popular food in America in 1970, surpassing regular just cooked potatoes. So French fries have been since 1970 the most popular food in America. Now, this is one that should...
Hold on. It is shocking that we have an obesity problem in the United States of America with French fries as the most popular food.
Okay, so let's go on to one of your favorite fast food places. You don't go to too many of them. You're a vegetarian, so it's kind of tough anyway. But I know one place you do love is Taco Bell. So here's a Taco Bell one for you. Taco Bell's taco salad has 52 grams of fat, which is more than 5 regular tacos put together. You can have 5 tacos to equal the taco. And, you know, salads are so deceiving because, you know, all of us think, oh, I'll get the salad. And then we pile it with, you know, dressing and all the cheese and everything else that's bad for you. And they end up being worse than a burger.
Isn't that the McDonald's salad, like the McDonald's chicken salad is something like 4 Big Macs? It's crazy.
I know. It is crazy. Now, on my new diet, I'm not allowed to have the salad dressing, so I've started to eat dry salads, which I've gotten used to now. That's something you have to get used to. But I've gotten used to it, so I think probably for me, salads are pretty good because I don't, you know, pile it through.
You don't even use vinegar on your salad?
No, I don't put anything. I just eat them straight up. You know, the problem with that is you have to have really good vegetables. If one of the vegetables in the salad is crappy, you can't cover it up with the salad dressing. You know what I mean?
You don't even put, like, lemon juice on it or something?
Nope, I eat it dry. All right. Every month, what percentage of Americans visit a McDonald's restaurant?
Oh, dear God. It's going to be frightening, isn't it? This number is going to shock us all. If I had to guess, how many people, I guess 50% of Americans visited?
Wrong. I got to get the buzzer. that's wrong. It's 90% of Americans visit for some reason or another. Now, they said a lot of people just get their coffee at McDonald's. They stop for coffee. A lot of people like McDonald's coffee, apparently. But it's cheap, probably, is why. But, yeah, it's 90%. Now, I don't know that Jennifer and I would live up to that one. I don't know that we go once a month to a McDonald's.
To a McDonald's?
Yeah, no. I don't think we do.
No.
I used to. When I was drinking sweet tea, I would go every week because I got their sweet tea. But
good Lord, that is about a million calories a cup.
There are 300,000 fast food restaurants in the United States. 300,000.
Oh, my gosh.
I knew this list was going to depress you.
Pointing to obesity. Shocking.
Who is the largest distributor of toys in the United States? What place is the largest distributor of toys, like Toys R Us or those kind of places?
Well, now you got me thinking McDonald's and their little toys.
Ding, ding, ding. McDonald's distributes more toys per year than Toys R Us.
Oh, yes. My God.
How about, I knew you'd love this one. Studies revealed 48% of drink, I shouldn't do this one. because it's I shouldn't do it. Studies revealed 48% of drink fountain dispensers, the ones where you go pour your own, were contaminated with fecal bacteria.
The drink fountains, I knew about the iced tea thing. Like, iced tea sometimes has the fecal matter in it. But drink fountains?
Yeah, yeah. So think about that next time you're pouring your Diet Coke. The most unhealthy fast food burger is from what chain?
Ooh,
and I'll give you a clue. I'll give you a clue. They're not everywhere. They're not down here.
Okay, so it's more like one of the In-N-Out burgers or...
I've never been Jack to one, an In-N-Out burger. I've never been to one.
Let's go Jack in the Box.
Well, so along that line, Carl's Jr. I've never been to a Carl's Jr. Where are they at? Are they like up in Chicago and area, or where are they at?
No, they're out here.
Oh,
that Carl's Jr. is out here. I believe Carl's Jr. also sells burritos. Like, I mean, it's a disgusting place. It's awful. But they have In-N-Out here. Because I'm from the East Coast, we, you know, there's McDonald's and Wendy's and Arby's. Out here is Carl's Jr., In-N-Out, and Whataburger. Just these, all like, you walk in and you get pimples from all the grease. Like, that's what I think of.
You know, Carl's Jr. or In-N-Out, people who like burgers say they'd love In-N-Out. I just never have been. I have to try it when I go out there sometime. Now, this burger, the Carl's Jr. Double Six, is 1,520 calories, 111 grams of fat, and 2,700 milligrams of sodium. It is 3/4 of your daily recommended calories in one burger, Carl's Jr. 61% of the population of Hong Kong claim to visit a fast food restaurant at least once a week. The most out of any nation, Hong Kong. And you know what they love over there in Hong Kong, you know, and China, what the biggest one is?
What?
It's not what you would think. You would think it would be McDonald's. It's Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's huge over there. They love their Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yep. Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's very popular in China. Number 7, Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola products are sold in every country in the world except North Korea. So it's nice to know that we export things that are really good for you. McDonald's.
Well, and North Korea is not allowed to have anything.
Anything, right. Yeah. They don't have food.
They can't have anything.
That's right.
Yeah.
McDonald's is the largest purchaser of beef, pork, and potatoes, and the second largest purchaser of chicken in the world. And add to
that... I didn't even know they used real meat.
Get this. Add to that, McDonald's uses 8% of America's entire potato crop.
Oh, my God. First of all, I like you said, I didn't realize it was real potatoes or real meat they used. So...
And why did car manufacturers begin installing cup holders in the 1990s?
Well, it's got to be the drive-thru.
Exactly. And we'll quickly go through the rest of these. Americans spent almost $150 billion on fast food annually, up from $6 billion in the 1970s. $150 billion annually.
Good Lord.
A&W Root Beer was the first drive-thru. And it was in California in 1919. They had the first drive-through. I'm assuming horses were allowed at that point, 1919.
I mean, but did they have, like, the technology to, like, did they just have a window and yell through it? Hey!
That's, I'm sure. You just drove up to the window and told them what you wanted. Dream. Number 2, advertising age called Ronald McDonald the number 2 advertising icon of the 20th century after the Marlboro Man. Both things that'll kill you.
Oh, God, healthy.
And here we go. This is the one you'll be surprised at or not. Proportionally, hash browns have more fat and calories than a cheeseburger or a Big Mac.
I love Waffle House hash browns, though. Oh, my God, they're good.
Can't tell you the last time I've been to a Waffle House. That's someplace we just never
go.
Me
neither, but I went there about 3 days a week in high school.
I was going to say, and you know, that's one of those places you go when you're in your drinking phase, because you go at like 3 in the morning, and that's probably why the hash browns tasted so good.
I didn't say when I went. I just said I went.
Well, there you go. There was my fun facts for the day. I'll make, think about that next time you're getting a Diet Coke at the machine. Well, let's take a break for our song. We're going to come back with thehorse.com, and they're going to be talking today about equitation science. We're going a little bit deeper today, and I know last week she said that Jamie was going to absolutely love this topic, so we'll find out here shortly. We'll be right back. I'm Gonna Fly is the name of the song today. Glenn the Geek here. The life of horse person is hard enough, and we all hate doing the required paperwork, and unfortunately, many of us never get around to it, and it just piles up on our desk. That is about to change thanks to the Equisketch Records app for your iPhone or iPad. My wife and I use it to track our horses, and we absolutely love this thing. Equisketch Records is the most thorough and complete equestrian records app on the market today. We love this app because you can track your farrier work, your dental, your coggins, medicines, worming, and so much more. And you can get reminders on your device when all of these things are due. You'll never forget a worming or shots or farrier visit again. But it not only tracks your horse, you can also manage your horse shows, including individual events. You can manage riders, including lessons and memberships, and so much more. And you can sync it between your iPhone and your iPad, and all of this for the price of a couple of cups of coffee from Starbucks. Search for Equisketch Records in the iOS App Store or go to equisketch.com. That's EQUISKETCH.com. Equisketch.com.
I've always been the shy and quiet type, biding my time until the time was right. Driving through life with one foot on the brake, mystery of a chance that I did not take. Now I'm gonna do whatever I please. No, nothing's gonna have a hold on me.
I'm taking nothing, holding
Well, that was Casey Smith, spelled with a K. Casey Smith with I'm Gonna Fly. We appreciate her allowing us to play her music here on Horses in the Morning. You are listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is over in the producer chair today. Jennifer, will you tell us what is coming up on Really Bad Ads Prizes this week on Friday? I think Wendy will be here helping us with Really Bad Ads, and we have some terrific prizes again.
On the prize pool this week, we have the UltraShield Fly Protection Package. The variety of pesky, biting insects you and your horse deal with throughout the spring, summer, and fall seasons can seem endless. Fear not. With four distinct fly control options, UltraShield EX, UltraShield Red, UltraShield Sport, and UltraShield Green, the UltraShield family from Absorbine allows you to choose the type of product to best suit your weather conditions, your horse's lifestyle, and workload. Look for Absorbine UltraShield Fly Protection at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can visit them online at absorbine.com, where you can also find downloadable coupons. They need to make UltraShield Pasture Puff. I'm going to suggest that. Uncle Jimmy's Gift Pack. While with Uncle Jimmy's Hanging Balls, Licky Things, and Squeezy Buns, you will always have boredom busted and rewards fresh at hand. Uncle Jimmy's products are all made with quality ingredients with flavors your horse wants most. Apple, carrot, molasses, and even sugar-free varieties. Ask for Uncle Jimmy's at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can visit them online at uncle-jimmy's.com. And rounding out the lineup, 5 free bags of feed, forage, or supplement from Triple Crown Nutrition. Triple Crown Nutrition offers a complete lineup of fortified feeds, forages, and supplements to satisfy the needs of your whole herd. I wonder if they want to donate some alfalfa to little PT. Whether you are looking for higher fat, lower carb, a senior diet, or sound nutrition for a growing horse, Triple Crown Nutrition has the answer. You can look for them online at triplecrownfeed.com.
Thank you, Jennifer. Some terrific prizes. I just can't added that up, Jamie. We have over $250 in prizes that we're giving away for Really Bad Ads on Friday. That ain't too shabby. Not too bad at all.
Dang, that's real. I'm going to submit to that.
You should. You always come up with good ones. while we're waiting for Jennifer to get the horse.com segment set up with Michelle and her guest, one of you posted a video on Facebook that
I just did.
Oh, man, that's cool. Tell us about it.
Dude, this video is ridiculous. I just happened upon it on somebody else's Facebook page. You know how Facebook works. And so it is a video of a guy who is doing some Grand Prix show jumping, huge stuff. And he's coming into the triple combination. And the combination should be jump, one stride, jump, one stride, jump. Or maybe two strides and less. Doesn't matter, because the horse tries to bounce it. He comes in so fast, the horse thinks he has to bounce, jump, jump in the first two. These fences are like 4.5-5 feet tall. So the horse crashes and hits the ground, and the rider flies off. After the second jump, the horse gets up and then jumps the third jump into combination riderless. Talk about a horse that knows his dang job. Good Lord.
You know what? You
I've
know
never when, seen it.
You know when riders fall off and they get back on their horse and they get the courtesy jump, you know, to make sure the horse knows he still has to jump it? This horse was just avoiding that.
Yeah, but he jumped his last jump in the combination and then ran to the gate. Like, yeah. I'm done.
That's it. Good. I can't help it. You couldn't stay on when I crashed through the second. He didn't just miss the second fence. He took it out.
Totally. Took it out. I mean, but bounced it as opposed to added a stride. I mean, and then to go on and jump, it was a two stride, and to jump the last one by himself. And the rider's like, What? It kind of happened behind him. He's like, what? It was great. Great video. Check it out on Facebook.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. It's pretty neat. Well, what you want to take? You want to take Michelle? I'll play this for you.
It's time for the weekly health report from Horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Well, we have Michelle Anderson, the digital editor of thehorse.com, here with our weekly horse health report. Good morning, Michelle.
Hey, good morning, Jamie.
Good morning. How are things? Where you're up in Oregon, right?
Yep, I'm up in Oregon. It's a little overcast. We have some wildfires out there somewhere, a little bit of smoke, but other than that, not too bad.
Well, great. Well, tell us a little. I'm interested to know what you're going to talk about. We have on the phone Dr. Carissa Wickens, and you want to tell us to introduce her, and we'll say good morning to her.
Yeah, so, Jamie, I'm glad that you're on today because I think you're going to find this really interesting. Dr. Wickens is with the University of Delaware, and she's here to talk to us a little bit about equitation science. Just last week, I mentioned that the previous week I had been at the ISIS conference, which is the International Society of Equitation Sciences. And anyway, so Carissa is here in the U.S., and she's going to tell us a little bit about what ISIS does and this research that's going on how our horses behave and how they learn. So let's start. Dr. Wickens, are you with us?
Yes. Good morning, Michelle. Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us to talk about this, because I know this is a super popular topic with the Horse.com's audience. Any stories that we do on equitation science are always super popular. So I want you to start out with explaining to us a little bit what equitation science is, because it seems like it's really a common term in Europe, but here in the U.S. we think equitation. I don't know, Jamie, what do you think when you think equitation?
I've got to get in there and look pretty and do my jump course.
Heels down, toes up, right?
Exactly, and have a nice jacket on and look good.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Wickens, what does it mean in the sense of equitation science?
Yes, and that's a good point. As far as I think sometimes with the terminology, there's been the way it's adapted and used is a little bit different, especially here in the U.S. Versus with our colleagues in Europe. So let me see if I can explain this a little bit and give sort of a background and definition for the audience here. Equitation science is really more focused on the training aspect and the horse-human interaction. So a lot of the research that the scientists and veterinarians and practitioners that are part of the International Society for Equitation Science are looking at has to do with promoting objective evidence-based understanding of the welfare of horses during their training and competition. And so it's really about applying and validating scientific methods that can identify when training techniques are maybe effective or ineffective, and how that influences the behavior and welfare of the horse, particularly the competition horse. And it's also really a discipline that is lots of different people working together with different methodologies and different approaches to explain horse training to those that are using it out in the field, and also really getting at learning theory in horses and trying to understand the horse's perspective in terms of how they learn and how our training methods may influence their behavior.
And so much of what we do with horses and training horses has to do with tradition. What does equitation science, how does equitation science handle tradition?
I think, you know, that's one of the themes at the conference this summer, just a few weeks ago, was, you know, getting this message out about equitation science and training and talking with people more about how our everyday interactions with our horses really can influence not only their well-being, but, you know, are they effective in their training? Are they learning what we're asking them to do? Some of the topics that were presented have to do with, you know, negative and positive reinforcement in horse training. You know, and some of that, even when it gets into terminology, a lot of the tradition, you know, has been that people train their horses a certain way. There's always been a certain way that they do it at their facility or their farm. And I think what some of the scientists that are part of ISIS have been doing is really looking quantitatively at these methods, trying to come up with data that provides this evidence of, you know, what we've done in the past. Is that always appropriate? Is there other ways that maybe can be more effective in teaching a horse to learn a new task? Or again, how, when we work with our horses every day, are we setting up their environment so that we're actually getting the most out of our horses in a way that is also very friendly and good for the horse? I hope that makes sense. I'm trying to...
It does. It does. And so can you explain to us a little bit about what ISIS is?
ISIS is the International Society for Equitation Science. It's a fairly young organization. It's been in existence for about 10 years, and it's basically a not-for-profit organization with the aim of facilitating research into the training of horses to enhance horse welfare and improve the horse-rider relationship. So it really has to do a lot with technology and methodologies that improve the ridden horses' abilities and again, their overall well-being in day-to-day life as part of their routine. So it really kind of started out a lot in disciplines like dressage, hunter-jumper, eventing, but as it's grown and as we've had more conferences, the annual conference, there's been a lot of interesting topics and a lot of interest in expanding this to other disciplines, including Western disciplines, so the ridden horse in Western type of events, speed events. It's also starting to engage some practitioners and scientists that are really youth development focused. So as it relates to 4-H youth and how they ride and what disciplines they're involved in and teaching youth, so at a young age, trying to teach some of these approaches, especially animal behavior and welfare, to our youth. That will be kind of the future of the industry, really.
And what is your role within ISIS? You played a pretty big part in this conference that we just had in Delaware.
Yes, and I actually started out with my co-organizer, Dr. Kami Haleski, for the conference this year. She was my mentor in my PhD program at Michigan State University, and so I was studying horse behavior and welfare under Kami's direction. So she really introduced me to ISIS. I was about halfway through my PhD when the conference was last hosted in the United States in East Lansing, Michigan, on the campus of Michigan State. And so as a grad student, I was introduced to the organization, met a lot of the practitioners and scientists, had read a lot of their work in writing my dissertation, and so it was a really good opportunity for me as a grad student to help organize that conference. And so early on, I became a member of ISIS, so that was back in 2007. So I've basically just been kind of a member of the organization, try to attend as many of the conferences each year that I can, but really took on a more active role in helping organize the conference this past year. And then just this year during the conference, I was nominated and selected to be the new secretary for ISIS. So I'll have a little bit more of a council member role with ISIS now going into the future here, at least for this next year.
So this is my first year attending an ISIS conference, and the thing that really struck me was how international the group is. And so where are some of the other places that the conferences have taken place?
Last summer, it was hosted in the United Kingdom. So it was actually at the University of Edinburgh at the Royal Dick Veterinary College. In past years, it's been in the Netherlands. In fact, there was, I think it was 2 years ago, they actually moved the conference to kind of mid to late fall. It was in late October in association with the World Dressage Forum in the Netherlands. So it does move around. It's been in Australia. As I mentioned, it was in 2007. It was hosted in the U.S. So that was kind of neat. This year, we were able to bring it back to the U.S. after 6 years kind of rotating through some different countries. But it is really nice. That definitely opens up for, you know, people. Sometimes it's just if they can't travel, it's kind of been in everyone's backyard, so to speak. And since it rotates, it makes it, I think, a little bit easier for folks to make it to these very, very good conferences. And again, I think we've really expanded. This year alone, we had almost 15 countries represented. Over 100 delegates attended the conference. Last year's conference in Europe was quite large, with over 200 delegates at the conference. And again, I think partly that's we have a lot of European influence in this group. So several of our colleagues are from the United Kingdom, from the Netherlands, and other countries around Europe, including Italy. And so when it's kind of more in their backyard, I think it definitely makes it easier for them to travel. But definitely very well representation this year from different countries, a lot of different scientists looking at several different aspects of equitation science.
And I am a dressage rider, and I have clinicked with a trainer from the Netherlands. And when she comes over, she brings videos and talks about equitation science and sits us all around and goes over the theory behind why we're doing certain things on a horse's back and how we can get them to understand what we're asking of them. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you see or hope to see in the U.S. coming from this work that's done with ISIS?
Yes, and I think because one of the really unique, very special, you know, aspects of ISIS is, I mean, even things from my childhood and growing up around horses, when I work with a horse on the ground, or if I've got a horse under saddle, there's so many things that we have done. You know, you mentioned tradition and asked about tradition, and you know, there's a lot of feeling, obviously, with us as horse people that intrinsically we think our horses understand what we're saying to them, and even the tone of our voice, for example. And it's been really neat to see some of our colleagues, and Cammie and I have actually done a little bit of work with our students in this area as well, even something as simple as conducting a study and collecting data on whether or not a certain tone of voice or a certain vocal cue means anything to our horses. And again, I think just intrinsically we think that, oh yeah, of course, you know, they understand what we're asking them to do when we talk to them or chastise them or whatever it is we're doing vocally with our horses, that makes sense to the horse. And, you know, we've used and built upon other work from other species, including canine work, and we've applied that to the horse. And so there was a couple abstracts that were presented at this year's conference that dealt very much with that question. There was a group from Guelph, Katrina Merkies, Dr. Merkies, actually was looking at vocal tones and cues and how that, if it has any impact on the horse, and are they paying attention to it, and how do they perceive that vocal cue? Does it soothe the horse? Does it kind of
did they
you know,
find anything
get them
out?
More aroused?
Did they come up with a verdict?
Yeah, and actually hers was looking at, they were recorded voices, and she played these voices back to the horses in an arena situation. And, you know, the title of her abstract was actually, "Does the Human Voice Have a Calming Effect on Horses?" And they did find some treatment differences in terms of a softer tone with a human voice actually appearing to have horses that are less distressed, particularly when the human is standing there outside the round pen and has their presence there during this playing of a pleasant voice.
It would be interesting to compare that then, that study with the human voice, compare it to music and see if they had the same results.
Yeah, and actually, because there's been some interest and some research conducted with that as well, even things like when horses are weaned from their dams. So when these are young horses that have just been weaned and they're being brought into the barn situation, are there certain types of music that are viewed as soothing to the horse? And there's been some studies on that as well. And so those are the kinds of research questions that
rap that's the most soothing for you.
and I think, you know, they're because of the key of some of the classical music, and surprisingly, this wasn't even just with ISIS, the ISIS group, there's been some really interesting studies that have been presented at the Equine Science Society meetings. Those are the big equine science conference that are held every other year. They're every 2 years. And there's been some groups in Australia and some other countries that have presented similar work on the effects of music. So it's something that has shown up with ISIS conferences, but also some of the other behavior and welfare work with horses that's being presented at other scientific meetings. But that's been something very interesting, too. So even certain kinds of country music, I believe it was actually, I want to say, a Johnny Cash song.
My board horse likes Johnny Cash.
There are
really does.
Songs that, because of the key of the music, have been shown to reduce heart rate and actually have some kind of stress-reducing effect when it's played to horses that are in stabled situations. Like when
I hear the
stalled.
Train a-coming round the bend.
See, it's that low, calming tone of Johnny Cash. That's awesome. I was actually reading your website, too, equitationscience.com, and you've got some studies done on the evaluation of using a whip in show jumping.
Yeah.
And then rein tension on your horse. Now, granted, this is big brain stuff. Like, to me, what I see is using a whip in your jumper. And, of course, you guys write it as evaluation of whip use and prevalence in the lead and non-lead show, blah, blah, blah. So, basically, use of whip and show jumping. So this is a fascinating website. I cannot wait to look. Is there a way I can subscribe to this website to see all the new media releases and studies that have been done? Because this is fascinating to even talk about on our show.
I think several of the pieces of information and resources on the International Society for Equitation Science website, you know, I believe there is a member area, so to have full access to some of the information, you know, folks might want to consider membership if they're interested in this area of science and equine behavior and welfare work. But there are several things on the website. There are, you know, definitions, that there's actually this entire page devoted to principles of learning theory and equitation. So there's 8 key principles of horse training and how learning theory and training can be applied properly and really kind of teaching all of our audiences maybe some different ways of thinking about reinforcing your horse, for example. You know, how can you increase the frequency of a behavior that you're trying to achieve? What means do you have at your disposal to do that in a way that's also very effective, but again, welfare-friendly to the horse? There's upcoming conference information. There are past proceedings. So a lot of the abstracts that are presented at different conferences over the last few years, you can usually get access to most of that information on the website.
Oh, and then on thehorse.com, we've covered the conferences for several years.
Yeah.
And this year we had 3 people there covering all the abstracts. We expect to have around 60 articles from the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And those show up in our welfare and industry newsletter, which we send out on Thursdays. So if people subscribe to that Thursday newsletter, they'll start seeing those coming through in the coming months. We just posted one about the rein tension study and then also some videos with Dr. Randall about her rein tension study. So we'll be having that stuff. So, yeah, it's really interesting stuff. I don't. Is there anything, Dr. Wiggins, that kind of shook your beliefs in traditional training, or anything that came out of this conference that really struck you as interesting?
Well, one thing that I have taken much more interest in and really want to understand better here with my appointment is primarily teaching, but I have a fairly hefty responsibility in equine extension and outreach for the state of Delaware, and also help put on some educational programs in the region for regional clients. And last fall, we actually held an equine behavior short course, and that was kind of the first time with an extension audience since I've taken the position here at UD that I was able to kind of introduce folks to ISIS and talk a little bit about equitation science. We talked a little bit with the audience about principles of learning theory and equitation, and so one of the things I really enjoyed and learned a lot about at this past conference this July was, again, getting the message out and how can we be better about sharing this information with our not only our colleagues, but with our students and with our extension audience, so, you know, mostly adult and or youth clients that are, you know, actively engaged in the horse industry, and whether that's, you know, whether they're competition and showing their horses competitively, or if it's more, you know, for recreation and trail that they have horses at their home. So I think what was helpful was talking to colleagues a few weeks ago about what are they doing in their classroom and with their audiences to try to explain equitation science. And again, like you said, the horse, having these articles about some of the findings that's coming out of this research that's being conducted, you know, whether it maybe challenges something that, again, we've traditionally done that may not be the best way of doing something, or if it's just brand new information, like, for example, all the technology now with the rein tension and the saddle pressure, if we can understand how we can avoid back injuries in horses with the saddle pressure information, all of that data that's being collected, you know, are there saddles that fit better, and how are they fitting better, and what does that mean to the horse and to the rider? So I think it's just this whole field of all these different topics that are so helpful, and so it was really helpful to kind of think about and talk with colleagues about, okay, how can we share this better? Where can we get this information out? The other thing, though, here is the racing industry is quite you know, it not only important to the economic impact here in the state of Delaware, but that's been something that growing up in Michigan, you know, we had some racing industry, but here in Delaware and Maryland and Pennsylvania, there are several racetracks and a lot of race training facilities. And so it was very neat this year to also see some data on whip use among jockeys and how that impacts the horses' performance and their welfare. And I think, again, to be able to open up some conversations with our racing commission folks and the people at the track, this information is needed and it's really helpful. So that was an abstract that I found extremely interesting at the conference.
Well, good. You guys can find out equitationscience.com. Of course, go to thehorse.com. We've run out of time, but this has been fascinating, and I really appreciate you being on, Dr. Wickens, and again, Michelle, always for bringing us the most interesting stuff.
And wait until we talk about in the future the semi-feral pony herd that we saw at this conference too. So hold on for that, because that's
next week.
Really the most interesting thing that I've ever seen with horses are those little semi-feral ponies and their behavior. So I'll get someone on to talk about that as well in the future.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dr. Wickens.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jamie.
All right. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.
Well, that was interesting.
Yeah.
So you think it's
like
a rap that soothes people the most? And would my voice be more soothing or yours?
I don't think that either one of us have very soothing voices.
That's true.
Sorry.
You know what? We'd probably be good.
We both lose.
You know those shaky tail horses? They try and get them all revved up and throw things at them and stuff. We'd be good for that. They should play our show in the morning. They wouldn't need to do all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. We'll wake everybody up. That's definitely the case. So, well, that's cool. Yeah, big brain stuff, but definitely interesting.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We really appreciate it. We've run out of time. You can listen to all the past episodes of our show at horsesinthemorning.com. You can follow us on Facebook. We've been posting all this stuff here this morning. And you can search for us in the
app. Or get the app.
Yeah, iOS or Android, just search for Horse Radio Network. Don't search for Horses in the Morning in the App Store. It's under Horse Radio Network, and we've had hundreds and hundreds of people download it now. So far, haven't had anybody complain about it. They said it's working great. So we wish that you would download it as well. All of the other shows are coming out right now on the Horse Radio Network. You can find those over at horseradionetwork.com or on the app. Jamie, I don't know. It's up in the air whether we're going to see you here on Friday. If Jamie's not here, then Wendy will be here filling in as usual on Fridays. But otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, just a brief, let everybody know, my dad had a heart attack, so I'm heading to Georgia on Friday and be there at least till next Wednesday. And just say a little prayer that everything's going to be okay. He's going to have some surgery, so Keep all of us in your thoughts, if you don't mind.
Well, big hugs from all of us and the listeners, too. You know, one of the things, my mom and dad went both through these kinds of things, and they can do some amazing things with medicine today, especially with the heart. So I'm thinking good thoughts for him.
Thank you. That's what I'm hoping. That's what we're praying for.
And
so,
you know what?
Love you guys.
We've met your dad on this show. He's too darn ornery to go anywhere, so...
Yeah.
He has to torment you for a long time to come.
Yes. Thank you for using Blog.